Hey, Jeff and Elliot, it's Cassie Campbell-Pascal. Congrats on your 100th episode. You guys rock and rule and roll.
First of all, Cassie, thank you. Second of all, we just heard from a future Hall of Famer. And third of all, did you have any idea that last week's was episode number 100 of the podcast?
No, I had no idea at all. Like, if you listen to Spinning Chiclets, they always start out with the number, right?
Yeah.
So you know that this is episode 3,476 for them. I had no idea.
Is that a lot in terms of podcasts, Emil? Is it? That's a lot? Honestly, I have no idea how many I did with Wish in the old MVSW days. I'm awful at keeping track.
Did you do that every week? Like, what was your schedule for that one?
When we started doing that, it was daily. Because don't forget,
right.
I had just come over from Hockey Night at CBC, and I missed the daily discipline of doing a daily radio show. And so I talked Scott Moore into letting us do this daily. And then that turned into, after a few years, we would do it 3 times a week.
That's
and then
right.
It got down to like once or twice a week as our schedules got goofy. He had just finished doing Puck Daddy Radio on The Score. So both of us had that, your chocolate's in my peanut butter, why don't we just put this together and come up with some way that Sportsnet could work with Yahoo and put this thing together. And it was a daily. It was a daily show that turned into what it then became and then eventually just fizzled out as Greg went Hollywood. Thank you, Cassie Campbell-Pascal. That is very thoughtful. Any more surprises this week, Emil? Oh, yeah, more surprises. Also coming up this week on the podcast, you will hear from Chris Johnston. We sat down with him a couple of days ago to talk about, and this was interesting, the behind the scenes on his documentary about Patrick Berglund that we all just saw on the weekend on Hockey Night, which is outstanding. And Chris lays out what it was like putting this thing together. And it's pretty interesting. And it was a really challenging piece for Chris to put together. And he documents and details all this. You'll hear that a little bit later on in the podcast. We're going to get back to Ask 31. That's coming up on the podcast. But Elliot, we'll start with the news of the last 24 hours. The New Jersey Devils, and this time it doesn't involve Taylor Hall. John Hines out, Elaine Nesredin in temporarily.
The first thing I thought of was good on the Devils for not having Hines coach at home on Tuesday night. Because last Saturday they played an afternoon game at home against the Rangers.
Did not go well.
Did not go well. The fans were all over him, the fire Hines. And if you've made that decision, it would have been cruel, I think, to let John Hines coach that game in front of those fans. Remember, Brian Burke, when did you fire Ron Wilson in Toronto when the fire Wilson chants really started going? He said, I can't do that to him again. And I think the Devils, it was back-to-back. There was a day off. They could have waited to the day off. No, you can't. You have to make your decision right there. Look, I don't think this is what the New Jersey Devils wanted to do, but look what was happening. The team had basically quit. There was no passion. There was no life. I don't believe that they felt that John Hines was anywhere near their biggest problem. But you reach a point where you have to change something, and it's always easier to change the coach than it is the players.
Am I too cynical if I say the GM couldn't get a goalie, so the coach had to go?
I think it's too cynical to say that, yes, but they're not as good as they thought they were. I think the biggest surprise to the Devils is this is a team that made moves this year that said, we're in the race.
Mm-hmm.
We're going for the playoffs. Maybe we're not a Stanley Cup team, but we're in the playoff race. And they aren't there. And, you know, Schneider's situation is one of the problems. He has said to me several times that the hip is not the biggest issue. I think his confidence, for whatever reason, he has never been able to regain it. I remember when he won his first game in about a year last year, I asked to talk to him and he did it because he's a great guy, but he was embarrassed about it. And I think everything that he's been through has really hurt him emotionally, and it's tough to find. You know, hockey can be a great game, but it can also be a very unforgiving game. And in his case, in terms of his performance, it's been unforgiving, and I think that's really affected him. Blackwood, they think that he's got a chance, but he's not ready for this. And also, I think they thought their defense was going to be a lot better. You take a look at the rush chances they give up. They have trouble against the cycle. You know, we did Wednesday Night Hockey on Thursday last week, and they had a two righty pair of Subban and Vatanen. You never see that. I just think they're not as good as they thought. They made the playoffs a couple of years ago. Maybe they just had a different idea of where they were, but they've been slammed back to reality in a really hard, hard way.
I want to get to who are the candidates to take over behind the bench on a full-time capacity. Alain Nizzardine is in there as an interim head coach. But how much does this change everything business-wise for Ray Shero, general manager of the New Jersey Devils, or does it just cement a decision he may have already made, i.e., we're selling?
We're selling. The sale is on. It's Cyber Monday.
Every day in New Jersey. It's Cyber Black every
Friday,
day.
Cyber Monday, Boxing Day. Like, it's going. I mean, the reports got out last weekend about Taylor Hall, and they were true. Like, the guys are telling me New Jersey is trying to see if they can do this now. Now, they may not, but they're trying.
Do it now before teams fall out of it, so you don't want to wait till deadline and only limit yourself to a couple of teams. Do it now while there's still the volume of teams involved in a bidding.
Well, do it now and see who's really out there. You know, who's serious. Like, look how hard it is to make the playoffs now. I do think there are motivated teams. I mean, the team we're all talking about is Colorado, because New Jersey's going to want young D prospects if they can get them, and Colorado's got theirs. Colorado can make this move. And it makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, Taylor Hall's the kind of guy who could win them the Stanley Cup. They're that good. Mm-hmm. But I think there's other teams too. I think the question is, can the Devils send out enough smoke signals that somebody feels the need to pull the trigger? I've heard Arizona. Like, I've heard they're a team that's pretty interested. And they make a lot of sense for me. This is a big year for them. They're in the race. They keep winning. They've got a new owner. They're trying to build up some excitement. Like, that one says a lot to me.
And their leading scorer is 87th in the NHL.
Yes, and Kessel's struggling. Like, if I was Dallas, I'd be all over Taylor Hall.
Hang on. Dallas is the streakiest team in the league, period.
Yes. Like, they grind you. They could use a burner like him. And I'll tell you, the other one for me, too, is St. Louis. Now, I don't think St. Louis is going to be able to pull this off, but I've got guys telling me that the Blues are now convinced they can repeat, and they're going to go for it.
It's a team that doesn't lose back-to-back regulation games, much like the Washington Capitals. Like, the Blues have come out of this, and I know there's a lot of one-goal games, understand that, but they've been a really consistent heavyweight team. Like, they're showing that last year was no fairy dust around the goaltender, and we're going to win the Stanley Cup. Like, they've come out as legit, once again, Stanley Cup contenders. The team that I wonder about with Taylor Hall is the obvious one, the showbiz one, the sexy one, the Edmonton Oilers. Now, that would probably involve New Jersey eating some salary. Does New Jersey have an appetite to eat salary on this one?
I believe so. You know, the one thing I don't know is, will New Jersey allow teams to talk? Like, if someone trades for Hall with the possibility of extending him, will they be allowed to do it? Like, because, you know, the one team I could really see doing that, just based on my own information, that could be more than one, is Calgary. I would be very curious to see what would Calgary do if they were allowed to talk to him. Now, we've talked a lot about this. I think New Jersey knew this anyway, although I can't tell you 100% because no one will confirm it to me. I believe he told them Hall wasn't signing during the year. Does that mean he'll potentially sign somewhere else during the year? I don't know. Unless it's a place that really grabs Hall, his imagination, I think it's extremely unlikely. So that's why I don't necessarily think Calgary's the team. But if you told me that the Flames were allowed to see if they could try to sign him, I think they'd really try it.
The most obvious comparable for trade is Mark Stone from last year, and that fetched a high-end prospect in Eric Brandstrom, another player, and a second-round draft pick. Should we expect more coming back to New Jersey in a Taylor Hall trade?
I think it depends on what your market is. You know, we had Mark Stone on this podcast, and what did he say? I only wanted to go to Vegas.
Vegas, yeah.
You know, like, if you're Ottawa, you're stuck in that situation. I thought they got a really good prospect. I think, you know, I'm still waiting to see a bit more from Brandstrom, but he's still young, and I think he's a talented guy. To me, it comes down to how big's your market.
Well, right now, the teams keep adding up, because you can throw Nashville into that mix. You can throw Montreal 100%. Into that mix.
We'll talk about Montreal, but I went through Mark Bergevin's trade history. He doesn't make his big deals in season.
But he's never faced a situation like this.
Well, that's the thing. Like, this feels different. And I do think one of the reasons that he's in Russia, because I couldn't believe he went. I was shocked he actually got on the plane. And now, like, we can all joke he should probably stay there because the karma's better.
They won to beat the Islanders.
But I do think that one of the reasons he's going over there now is because he's trying to find out, if I make this move, will I be able to cover for it? Mm-hmm. So he's looking at Romanov, and he's looking at Okulov, and he's like, do I know I'm going to have these guys next year? Because if the answer is yes, I think it gives him some comfort. The other thing people say about Montreal is they got a lot of players coming, but coming doesn't help you now.
Right.
And if they miss the playoffs for a fourth year in a row, all bets are off.
Back to New Jersey. You wrote about Miles Wood.
Yeah.
We're going to get back to the coach here in a second, I swear. Miles Wood, that name's out there now?
Yeah. He just hasn't been the same. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if it's an injury thing. And he plays a tough role. And it's a role that's hard to do, and it's a role that's shrinking in the NHL. But it's not just about the fighting. It's playing with an edge. It's being nasty. He hasn't been that player. And I think New Jersey's just trying to see, okay, what's out there for him. But he's got 2.75 a year the next 2 years. I don't think that's easy.
All right, back to the coach now. So who's next? And the obvious name that jumps off the page right away, considering the association going back to Pittsburgh, is Dan Bylsma.
I don't know if it's going to happen. That was the first thing I thought of, and I mentioned it yesterday on my hit on NHL Network that was the name that was out there, and I just got some pushback on it. I think there's a couple of things. First of all, you know, somebody made a good point to me. They said, the toughest thing if you're in New Jersey is, how do you hire a coach right now? With everything we're learning about finding out about some people and things that went on and investigations that are continuing.
Oh, how do you hire a coach in general?
Yes.
And that's not exclusive to New Jersey.
No,
that's everybody.
That's everywhere. It's everyone. Like someone said that this is probably the worst time to try to hire someone because we're all figuring out, we're still sort of on the wave of where this is going what the results are going to be.
We're seeing it now in every media conference after there's any type of coaching hire. One of the first questions is now going to be, and for the foreseeable future, what type of background check have you done?
Absolutely. And there is like a code of conduct coming in all of this. They've basically rewritten, from what I understand, their entire Board of Governors agenda that was supposed to be there. There's a meeting next week in California. That's totally changed. And, you know, this is a big deal now. And how do you conduct a search and how do you hire somebody in the middle of all this? I think it's impossible.
So you think Nezradine gets the rest of the season?
If you listen to Ray Shiro,
would it surprise you if Nezradine gets the rest
that's
of the season?
I think that's the, as we sit here today, I think that's the most likely scenario. Nezradine gets the rest of the season. You know, if you watched any of their game on Tuesday night against Vegas, they played better.
Yep.
They blew another lead again, which has been such a huge problem for them, but they played better. And, you know,
Marchessault killed them.
Yes.
Marchessault killed them.
I think New Jersey, you probably just want to slow things down right now. You want to pull that, like, just slow it right down.
Yeah.
Allow yourself to breathe. You know, like.
And that was Subban versus Subban, and PK had zero shots on his brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
That wasn't missed.
No. I just think the Devils, they're sitting here. You're right now. You're absolutely shocked about where you are. You can't believe that this is your position. And the worst thing you can do is rush into another hire. Slow it down. Take some time. You know, I think Bylsma's name will be there. I think Nazarene gets a chance. And also, don't forget, you know, you're paying Hines for another year, right?
Yes.
Now, he'll get hired somewhere, so there'll be a bit of an offset. But, you know, I don't think you want to race into any quick decisions. We both know Tyler Dello. And, you know, he worked in Edmonton with Rocky Thompson. I think as the focus changes on the kind of coach that's going to get jobs, I think Rocky Thompson is going to get a chance somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy, and I really believe this, who's got to get a chance at some point is Lane Lambert.
Was involved with Anaheim in the offseason, was close to getting that job, as I think we're both on the same
and
page.
And Colorado, when they hired Jared Bednar, he was in that mix. But look, now he's won a Stanley Cup. He's in New York with the Islanders, which is one of the surprise teams of this year, last 2 years. I mean, at some point in time, you know, he's going to get his shot. Somebody told me, I think he was Steve Yzerman's roommate at one point in Detroit.
In Detroit, yeah.
I mean, who knows? Maybe that's a future.
He is going to end up as he's going to end up as a head coach eventually in the NHL.
You know, Ray Shero said, I'm going to make a list. I'm going to take my time. I think they let this breathe. There's no need to rush. Find out what you have. Maybe Nasruddin is the right guy. Maybe, you know, I think the toughest thing, though, and we talked about it with Jeff Ward, is when you go from an assistant coach to a head coach, the dynamic with you and your players changes. Can you navigate that? Can you go from being the good cop to the guy who has to be the bad cop? Mm-hmm. I think that's very important. So let's see how he navigates it.
Who does need to rush right now? If New Jersey's in wait-and-see land here right now, we just talked about Montreal a second ago, and that's a big win against the Islanders at the Bell Center on Tuesday night. Oh, Montreal does have, like, Montreal's schedule is okay coming up. They've got Colorado on Thursday. That's a back-to-back. They'll play the Maple Leafs on Wednesday. Then they have the Rangers, the Penguins, and a pair against Ottawa and Detroit. So the schedule is kind of leaning to their favor.
Montreal?
Yes.
We said that 2 weeks ago.
I know we did.
They got 1 point out of eight or something.
Wheels fell off the wagon. All the teams that they were supposed to beat, they didn't, and they got plastered by the Boston Bruins. But if they are coming out of this thing, the schedule is their friend right now.
To me, it's just nothing is safe there unless Price finds himself back. And he will. You know, we talked about this, that his work ethic early in his career was something that got called into question. Nobody calls that into question anymore. The guy works. Did you watch the Islander game at all the other night?
I did, yeah.
So
ice surfing.
He
yeah.
got mad. Well, I know you're watching 12 games at once there.
Yeah. When's the last time you watched one game at a time, Elliot?
I generally try to.
I
pick one game and I'll have some other ones around. But I really think that Price, when he went after Brock Nelson and the Islanders there, because he thought Nelson dove. Like last week when he got frustrated, he smashed his stick and then he did the Bo Jackson on it.
Yeah.
We're all sitting there saying, that's bad. That's frustration. This was different. This was like, hey, that's BS. Yeah. And he was going at it with the Islander bench. Like, I loved it. Like, that to me is the right kind of emotion.
Lot of good in that. I thought Gallagher had a real good game. I thought Petrie had another real good game. I thought there were a lot of positives coming out of Montreal in that one. All right, 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Let's kick it off. Brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra trucks.
Right, guys, 1,000 shows, that's unbelievable. Oh, that was for the spitting chicklets, guys. Freach, Merrick, 100 shows. congrats. See you at the draft, boys.
Sammy Cosentino. That's good stuff. Thanks for our man, Sammy, for the jab and for the praise. Sort of.
I hope that guy writes a book someday. You know, he's probably got some great stories.
I wish that guy would get on Twitter. I think
I don't blame
every
him. He's the smartest man alive.
I know. Every CHL hockey fan wants, and any draft Nick wants, Sam Cosentino on Twitter. By the way, his latest list is out, sportsnet.ca. Check it out. All right, a few things. You winked at Arizona a couple of minutes ago. Let's do a little bit more there. Second place as we record this in the Pacific. Darcy Kuemper doing an amazing job and in the conversation for the Vezina. I would imagine he would be in the conversation for the Hart Trophy. Not sure if you're one of those voters that don't like goaltenders winning
Hearts. No, I don't believe in that.
Okay, even though there's nothing in the definition about it, that's all right. We thought
No. I don't believe in saying goalies shouldn't be available.
Okay, then we are on the same page.
Yes,
then.
Like that, to me, that's stupid. Like, you're a player.
I agree. Oh, they have the Vezina. Well, sure, and defensemen have the Norris.
That's the dumbest argument alive.
We thought November had the potential to destroy the Arizona Coyotes. 16 games in 29 days. 8-5-3. And there were some of those games.
And they left some of those on the table.
Well, that's
right?
It. Like, there were some games where, you know, Rick Tocchet's talking about, we left that one. And they probably could have picked up 3 or 4 more points in the process and a couple more wins. And anytime you have a month like that, there are certain stories you have to talk about. Darcy Kuemper's one of them. Christian Dvorak lately has been great. 5 points in his last 4 games. Alex Goligoski paired with Jacob Chychrun has been outstanding as well. What did you think of that month that we just saw from the Coyotes?
I thought they were really good. Again, I bet you they're probably wanting more. Like San Jose, at the end of the month, they had them down 2-0,
yep.
And San Jose came back and won, and now the Sharks are... That's a game where you're looking at, like, we can try to put them out of the race a bit, mm-hmm. and you let them off the mat. They've had a few games like that. The one thing I've heard, though, about them is that they're improving to the point where, you know, it used to be it was moral victories for them, like they were in games and they were close. That's yeah. not the case for them anymore. Now they're mad when they lose. And when you're mad when you lose, that's the sign that you have expectations. I think they have expectations there. One saying I have a lot of is that if you have players you really believe in, bet on them early. Like, good players never get cheaper. They always get more expensive. Now, this is what Arizona did. They bet on a lot of guys. They bet on Chychrun.
Yes.
They bet on Schmaltz. They've bet on Keller. You know, not all of them are going to work. Some of those bets are not going to work. But it looks like they have a chance for a pretty good batting average on them. And, you know, it's still early. We're only 2 months in. But you look at the way they're going and you say, okay, there's a method to this. It could be working.
Just get some goals.
Yeah.
Nick Schmaltz, leading scorer, Arizona Coyotes, 20 points in 29 games. And as I mentioned in the open, that's 87th in the NHL. Darcy Kemper and that blue line can only do so much.
Yeah.
Get me some goals.
Get some goals. And that's why I could see them taking a run at Hull. You know, if I was them too, the other guy, and they've done deals with the Rangers. I just popped into my head now. They've done deals with the Rangers before. Kreider. Sure.
You think it's...
Just they got to get a score. They got to get somebody who can score.
And he brings some toughness to the lineup, and he brings some speed to the lineup as well.
Yeah.
You think he's gone for sure?
I always worry about saying this because then, you know, we drop the podcast and I look like the biggest idiot because he signed an $11 billion extension. It just doesn't sound
like
he's
going to happen.
Yeah.
Boston, the best team in the NHL right now?
I think so. Actually, I got to tell you, I think St. Louis is right back.
Yeah, they're
there
impressive.
Again.
I know. They really are.
But, you know, the thing about Boston.
And Jake Allen.
I'm happy for Jake
Same.
Allen. Like, that's a big redemption story. But the thing about Boston is I can't believe how many goals they score where they're not looking at each other. Like, it's craziness.
That's a team that, but the interesting thing about it, too, is it's not as if it's just the guys that have been there forever, like Brad Marchand and David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Charlie Coyle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think lost on a lot of people Tuesday night. Charlie Coyle scores for the Boston Bruins, turns out to be the game winner on the same night that Ryan Donato was scratched.
Yeah, that's tough for that kid.
In Minnesota.
That's really tough for that kid.
That's a tough one.
You know, I'd said a while ago, I'd heard that, you know, they were talking about moving him, but I think people are trying to scoop him away at a low price.
Back to the Bruins. David Pastrnak, 25 goals in 28 games. 50 and 50?
I hope so. I was looking at it. He's shooting like 22%.
Yeah.
Marchand's shooting like 27%.
All right, so as I push my glasses up, that's unsustainable, Elliot Friedman.
I think the number one guy among guys who's played a lot is Josh Bailey. Like, he's got 27% on like 11 shots.
Well, that, you
it's
know,
not that low, but he doesn't shoot very much.
You know who did that? You know who was notorious for that? And his shooting percentage was sky high at the end of his career was Alex Tanguay.
Oh,
Tanguay was
right.
The same. Yes. Like, he would only shoot if it was the perfect shot. If there was any hesitation about it going in, mm-hmm. Tanguay is passing the puck. You know what's really interesting? And this one snuck up on me. And I said to myself, what a sneaky great career. So Tuesday night, Yaroslav Halak plays game number 500. That's fantastic.
He's got a heck of a career.
Hang on. You know, he's got 49 shutouts. That one just slapped me in the face.
He's like a good
49
goalie.
Shutouts for mm-hmm. you. What a sneaky good career.
Mm-hmm.
When do we talk about Yaroslav Halak? Career save percentage, 917. This year he's a 934. I know I always talk about Dallas as having the best battery of goaltenders in the NHL,
mm-hmm.
but last year and this year, Tuukka Rask and Yaroslav Halak, and what a sneaky good career Yaroslav Halak has had.
He's had a great career, and you think he's played for a lot of teams. Like, I know. You go through it, you forget about all the teams he's played for: Washington, St. Louis, Buffalo,
and the coming out party was 2010 when he was making all the saves and Camilleri was scoring all the goals and Kirk Muller was designing all the plays on the Montreal bench.
Absolutely. Talk about guys who could write a book. He's a guy who could write a good book, too. He's a good guy to talk to, too. He's really smart. Like, I asked him about going to Boston and what it's like there, and he talked about it's just such a self-policing group that the coaches only need to worry about things that coaches would like to worry about. You don't have to worry about everything else. The guys make sure you fit in. The guys have a lot of the rules. Their best players are their hardest working guys. Everybody gets better. Like, generally in Boston, I think with this particular group, if you don't fit in, I had this conversation the other day, Jeff, about fitting in and not fitting in, and that how one of the things that has to change about hockey is that you have to understand that everybody's different now, and there's a greater understanding of that. And if someone doesn't fit into your group, maybe it's not that person's problem. Maybe it's you.
Yes.
And you're the problem because you're not welcoming enough. And in Boston, I don't think that's an issue. Okay, you're this. We're going to try to make it work. And I think more and more teams are going to have to do that.
I can recall having a conversation in the Montreal dressing room when I was doing ringside for Hockey Night with Yaroslav Halak. And we were talking about just a casual conversation in the room about his equipment. And we're talking about save percentages around the NHL and blah, 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 blah. One of the Habs players, I can't remember who it was now, came over and had a smart-ass comment about the save percentages are huge because the goalie equipment is huge and blah, blah, blah. And right away, he started firing back about composite sticks. Like, he was just dying to have that argument with one of the shooters that was going to get on him about the equipment being so big. But that's the thing about Yaroslav Halak that's always impressed me. Not huge. You know, we think this is the era of the 6'6 goaltender and the 6'5 goal. That's not Yaroslav Halak. Like, he's done all this being a, by today's standards, smallish goalie.
Yep.
Impressive guy. 49. I don't know why I'm stunned by that. I did not expect to see that number. 49 shutouts for Yaroslav Halak.
Look at it this way. Until Marty Brodeur, the NHL record was 103.
Terry Sawchuk. And I can remember.
Would you have imagined
that
he'd be almost halfway there?
But I was biased by my father. And here's why. I can recall having conversations with my dad and him talking about records in the NHL. And one day this will be broken, and one day that'll be broken. And he would always come back to, but son, one record that'll never be broken is Terry Sawchuk's shutout record. Here's a name, Jack Eichel.
Wait a sec. The record that's never getting broken?
Yeah.
Glenn Hall, 502 consecutive starts.
Very true. And it's even longer when you factor in that he played consecutively through the minors as well. That's just NHL. When you combine all of it, it gets more and more spectacular. But you're right. That one ain't getting
touched. That one is not getting touched. That's the safest bet. What's that name of the place that gives the gambling advice that David Amber should use, Amal? Odd Shark. You go on to Odd Shark, they'll tell you, Glenn Hall, 502 straight starts, that's the safest bet you can make.
What do you think Glenn Hall did when he first heard the term load management? Like, can you imagine someone trying
this
to have
this is an R? This is not an R-rated podcast.
Like, load management conversation with Glenn Hall. All right, I'll try this again. Jack Eichel.
Well, I've been really impressed by this guy this year.
Yep.
Buffalo started great. We were all talking about how great they were. Then they go through a rough time, and now they're starting to pull their way out of there again. And Eichel, I think, has had a lot to do with it. Look, we've all talked about Eichel's past. He showed his frustration on the ice. You could see when you were getting to him. I've seen a guy this year who has said, I am going to lead us out of this. Like, yep. I am pulling us out of this. Yep. And it's been noticed. Like, people have noticed how well he's played, particularly when he struggled. So November 16th, that's a couple weeks ago, they had a Saturday night game against Ottawa. They were up 3-2. He had three goals. They were on the ice for an empty netter with 30 seconds left. There was a face-off, and a couple of guys told me that they thought that he was telling teammates not to pass him the puck. And there's a little bit of it on video. If you watch the end of the game, you could see it. So Berkey and I drove down to Buffalo last Friday for the afternoon game against the Leafs, and I asked him about a post-game. He was a bit sheepish about it, but he just said, look, like, Jimmy Vaisio at that point hadn't scored. He was goalless in 15 games. I was telling him to go to the empty net and try to get him one.
Yeah.
And he was a little bit embarrassed, but I'd asked, so he answered the question. But like, to me, that's a small thing, but it's a big thing. Like, you got to get your teammates going. But anyway, Eichel scored his fourth goal that night, so he could be a nice guy and still reap the personal rewards.
Do you think it bothers him? Because I put him in that conversation skill-wise with the elites in the game. Do you think it bothers him that his name isn't in those conversations? Because you look at that draft year, and that's Connor McDavid, but any other draft year, Jack Eichel's going number one with a bullet, long-term deposit, result guaranteed. Do you think it bothers him that when discussion about the greats in the game right now are had, that generally his name isn't brought into it, and it probably should?
Well, you know, you have to have team success, right? Like, for all the struggles Edmonton's had, McDavid's gone to the playoffs once, and same with Dreisaitl. Buffalo hasn't been there. But, you know, I do think it's changing this year. Like, people are noticing. They're saying, hey, have you noticed how good Eichel's been or how well he's played? I look at him and I say, if they get into the playoffs and he drives that bus like he's doing now, you're going to see a lot more. I think people respect McDavid. Oh, boy, this is going to get me in so much trouble in Edmonton that I just can't even wait to see how my Twitter timeline fills up from them.
Let's just isolate this and use it as a promo before the podcast.
Leon Draisaitl scored 50 goals last year.
Yeah.
But I think in a lot of people's eyes, it was an empty 50. Okay? And the reason was the team wasn't very good. He played a lot with McDavid. And there were times they wanted to play separate for McDavid to make the team better, and he resisted it. So I think people looked at it and said, great accomplishment, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't know how much it really truly impressed people.
Okay.
This year, that guy is carrying the mail. McDavid is carrying the mail, and he is carrying the mail. And I give the guy a lot of credit. I think at times, see, this is when we talk about evolving and people getting better, and we're all trying to get better all the time. I think Leon Draisaitl realized that as great as 50 goals was, and it's great, it doesn't matter if the team is bad. Mm-hmm. Now, how much better as a team are the Edmonton Oilers when you look at the roster this year?
Adding Mike James Smith. Neal and adding Mike Smith.
Yeah, okay. But
I mean, there's some bottom six pieces that have changed out, but as far as players that directly impact the
your
game.
Your core.
Same.
Those two guys are dragging Edmonton to the top of their division right now. And that's what great players do. How can you not respect what they've done? And I think Eichel is trying to do the same thing in Buffalo. They're shy forwards. They're trying to get them. They're defense heavy. But he is determined to be the right person and do things lead-wise. And I think everybody is noticing what all those guys are doing.
What's the holdup on a Buffalo deal right now? Do you know? They do have a million.
I just think that, you know, like when everybody knows what you got to do, you're in trouble. I'm curious to see, like, Bogosian, his contract is coming up, how he plays. Like, Colin Miller just has to be dying there. Like, yeah. It's not fun. You know, Scandella, his name's been out there. It's been tough on Colin Miller. I'm wondering, you know, like Vegas, like they miss him. They miss his game. But I think it's hard to make a deal when everybody knows you want to make a deal.
All right, a couple things before we get to Chris Johnston. Nashville and the return of Kyle Turris.
They score! Kyle Turris has tied it.
What's happening there?
Well, I was happy for him. I really like Kyle Turris a lot. You know, you look at him and you think, quiet guy. Not a lot of energy there, but he cares. That guy cares a lot. He's got a lot of pride. I think I've told this story before. I can't remember. It's one of the 90 stories I've told 1,000 times. But when Kyle Turris was in Arizona and was getting traded, he got traded to Ottawa, and I went up there for CBC at the time to do a story on him after he got traded.
That was the era where everybody got traded for David Rundblatt.
Yes.
In the NHL.
And I had heard that people blamed Turris's parents for that deal. And like they said that they put it in his head that you have to get out of there and that's not for you. And Turris was really friendly. He was easy to talk to. He was happy to talk about anything. And I asked the question about the parents and, you know, somebody said like, No, we're not. You're not asking that question. I'm not going to say who it was, but there were other people around. They said, you know, like, my point was, hey, it's out there. Do you want to address it? And Turris goes, oh, I'll answer that question. And he had a bit of a fire to him. And he said, like, basically said in a nice way, don't blame this on my parents. Like, this is my decision. And I think that's a lot who he is. Like, he doesn't show a lot publicly about how he feels. But, you know, on the ice, like a lot of guys, he's a different person and he goes for it. And I think that he was frustrated. Someone told me to watch him on the fourth line. And it was another coach. And he said, Turris can't play with those guys. And he says, I'm not insulting them. I would never do that because everybody in the NHL is a great player, as I always say. But he says, Turris needs to carry the puck. And he needs to be able to make plays. And on the fourth line in Nashville, you're a little safer. It's not like that. Second line last night, better player. This is the optimal solution for Nashville. You got to find a way for Turris to stay up higher, and he's got to show that he deserves to stay up higher.
We've talked about Drew Doughty before representing himself in his contract negotiations.
Yeah.
And you've made the point that general managers, contrary to what you might feel about it or how you might feel about it, general managers actually don't like this because there's no buffer between the team and the player.
Yep.
If he's representing himself.
Kelly hates it too.
Nicholas Backstrom, same vibe?
Well, he confirmed it. On their road trip, he did say that. Now, Kelly Rudy hates this. I remember years ago, I almost did a story on the CBC about players going without agents, and he said he hated the idea because when you're struggling, the general manager sometimes needs somebody to call and say, what's going on with your client? He's not doing really well. Is there something here we're missing? A good agent can be a buffer with the team. When something's not going right, you can fix it. I will say this. One of my more recent contracts, I started negotiating it myself. I don't advise this strategy for anyone. There is a reason people do it for you. But what this says to me is a deal's getting done there. And they're going to take care of him because he's getting his number retired there someday.
Do you think that the term coincides with Ovechkin?
I've heard that before. I've heard that they will do it together.
Right.
But, you know, until it happens, it doesn't happen.
Quick final note before we give way to Chris Johnston of Sportsnet.ca and headlines on Hockey Night in Canada and his feature that we just saw in his conversation with us about the behind the scenes on it, expats. Calgary, this was a neat little note. I love these sort of little, I don't want to call them throwaway notes, but things that you just, little pepper and parsley you put all throughout the blog. Calgary and Sam Bennett, Montreal, Anaheim, Nashville.
Well, I think those are all teams that have taken a run at them in the past. Like, it's obviously been a crazy time in Calgary lately. And I you know, I do want to say that Brad Tree Living, he was the face of that. Nobody else was talking. And to imagine the stress and the pressure you're under when most of that occurs well before, you know, you sign him. I thought he did a really good job. I mean, we could all be better, but I thought he did a really good job. Just imagine you're the only one talking in the entire league about that situation for 4 days. Just imagine being in that spot.
And I'll go you one further. Having every conversation or every press conference you're about to have lawyered before you step in front of a microphone, and there are certain things you can say and certain things you cannot say, has to be not just incredibly challenging, but incredibly frustrating.
Well,
and potentially dangerous. And potentially dangerous if you're Brad Tree Living.
Well, let's talk about this for a second, Jeff. Like, you and I, so how many times did we abort the podcast last week?
Once we had to leave.
We did it 2 days late.
Yeah.
And I didn't do 31 Thoughts last week, and I really struggled getting it done this week. And the reason is, like, the slightest mistake now is devastating. And this is such a serious issue, and you want to treat it with such respect, and you want to be respectful to all the people involved, that you're sitting there and you're poring over every word, making sure that you get it right. And he's doing it live. Like, at least with the podcast, When you make your 37 mistakes, we can edit them.
Hey.
When I write my blog, I can pour over the words, and I have Craig Battle, who mostly edits it, and he does a great job.
Yep.
Just imagine you're the one guy out there. But anyway, as we were talking about with Sam Bennett, I think when they were struggling, I think there were some people trying to steal them. And I think they resisted. And then last week they were doing no other business.
Right.
I think Calgary will see if Jeff Ward, how much the environment is different around him. And then they'll make some decisions. But I don't think they obviously liked how they started their season.
We'll step away. We'll come back. You'll hear from Chris Johnston from Hockey Night in Canada and Sportsnet.ca.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Elliot. This is Tara Sloan. I wanted to congratulate you on your 100th episode. And also, congratulations on having such a fantastic, thorough look at the game of hockey. I want to also tell you how much I appreciate you personally taking the time for me not to just kind of go over the Coles notes or the Wikipedia entries of my career personally, but really go into some of the tougher places. And I think that's what sets you both apart from all the various podcasts and information sources out there. So you're both fantastic at what you do. You're both too damn smart for your own good. And I love you both a lot.
I think everyone realized that something is definitely not right here.
There was like something is wrong. He's not himself.
He said he wasn't feeling very well. He just left all that money.
You knew that it was more into the situation than maybe it was explained in the media.
Perfect shoots, he scores! What a shot by Perfect!
The big Swede!
31-year-old Patrick Berglund played parts of 11 seasons in the NHL. 10 of those were with the St. Louis Blues.
St. Louis Blues have made a deal getting Ryan O'Reilly from the Sabres for Patrick Berglund.
It wasn't supposed to happen even, be possible. Woke up one morning and I had 100 text messages, 100 phone calls, and it was just a shit show.
The fact that he would basically take his sticks and pucks and go home was a surprise to everybody. I think they should just, you know, ship him on the first boat back to Stockholm.
I called him and he said, I don't want to play hockey anymore. And then I realized that there was something much deeper. He couldn't leave the shot behind him and going forward. It was just a too big thing for him.
Please be joined by Chris Johnston of Headlines and Sportsnet.ca. And the main reason why we have you here today, CJ, is to draw attention to and applaud you for a wonderful piece that we just saw in Hockey Night in Canada on the weekend, Expat, the story of Patrick Berglund. First of all, congratulations. This is an outstanding piece. What was it like putting it together?
Well, I would be remiss if I went any further without mentioning Jeremy McElhaney.
Yeah.
As I know both you and Elliot, Jeff, have done these kind of things in the past, and he was the producer of the story. He actually set up the interview initially. I wasn't even part of it, and it turned out I was going on this trip to Sweden to do some other stuff for Sportsnet. And he said, hey, do you mind doing the interview? And so, you know, that's kind of how I got involved initially. And, you know, it was great. You know, I've never done something quite like this, I would say. And you know, we sat down with Patrick in late August in Stockholm, probably talked for an hour or a little bit more, a little bit off camera and then a lot of that on camera. And he was in an interesting place at that time. He was just opening a training camp for his team there in Djurgården. You know, he spent the last 7 months before that not playing hockey after stepping away from the Sabres last year. And he was a range of emotions. He showed some emotions, gave a little way during the interview, like a little bit of how tough it was on him to go through this. He was a bit feisty with me. He was a bit feisty with other people and some of the subject matter. And it was really, really cool to have that time with him and to get a chance to pick into what turned out to be, you know, even more than what you see in the, it's a very complicated story. You know, no one wants to speak for this guy. And we had so many declined interviews on this. It almost surprised me, honestly, because you know, a year later, you're not looking to pick through the dirt so much as just try to gain an understanding of how you could get to the point he got to. And, you know, I think we got partway there, but there's still probably a little bit that went unmined.
You know, I wanted to ask you about, you're doing the interview with Berglund, and it's pretty clear he reaches a point where he doesn't want to talk about it anymore. And I've been in that situation before. And why don't you explain what it's like for the people listening to this podcast? Because a lot of times people sit down in a chair with us now, like it used to be, okay, I know I'm going to get roasted in this interview, but I'm going to do it. And now it's changed to, you know what, I'm not doing interviews anymore if I'm going to get roasted. So now he's in this interview and it's clear, you're not roasting him, but you're trying to get to the bottom. And he reaches a point where he's like, I don't want to do this anymore. And that becomes really uncomfortable. What's that like for you in that moment?
Well, I have to say, I don't speak of this as an expert because, you know, unlike you, I haven't done this a lot in this one-on-one setting with the camera. But I'll tell you what I was thinking. You know, we're over here in Stockholm. The company's paid a lot of money to have us be there. And as I said, we were there doing some other stories and things. But, you know, I felt a fair bit of pressure to get something out of the interview that would be of interest to the viewer. You know, I also felt, you know, I wanted to be fair to Patrick Berglund. I mean, he didn't have to agree to the interview. So you're trying to walk that line when you're going through that. And when, there was actually twice, two different times where he kind of pushed back.
You're asking a lot of questions about it now. I moved on from that situation.
And, you know, I just said to him, and I think some of it might have, my voice might have appeared in the piece, but I just said,
I mean, I understand that. I'm just trying to, you know, trying to get in your mind because, you know, not a lot of players have done what you ended up
doing. No, I know that, but it's more to life than just hockey.
You know, I'm just trying to understand, you know, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to you, but, you know, most people can't imagine leaving, first of all, spending their whole life trying to get to the NHL and then willingly walking away. And then the amount of money that in his case was on the table that he stepped away from. And to be fair, he was good after I said that. We had another good section of questions and then he pushed back again. And that's kind of when I knew I was at my end with him. But, you know, I did feel personally as the interviewer that I had to get something out of that just because of the circumstances around. We weren't just doing it in our studio in Toronto. There was a cost there. He'd agreed to it. And I sort of felt like he had signed up for it in a sense by agreeing to speak with us to begin with.
He's an interesting guy. One of the more interesting things that I've experienced around Berglund, this would have been trade deadline, geez, CJ, 2, maybe 3 years ago. When
2017?
When he thought he was on the move.
Yeah, 2017.
And I remember getting a call from someone with the St. Louis organization, and he said to me, Patrick Berglund's packed everything he owns, it seems like. The St. Louis Blues were on a road trip. I said, have you heard anything about Patrick? So obviously it wasn't someone that worked in the front office. Have you heard anything about Berglund? Because he's convinced he's gone. I haven't seen anyone pack for a road trip like this ever in the NHL.
Huh. Well, you know, it's funny. That's actually when he signed the contract. You know, it was just before that trade deadline, because I do think they were considering moving him. I mean, at that point in time, like we see basically every trade deadline, he was one of those players that
always
that was a either or. Either they were resigning him and extending him, which they ultimately did, or, you know, likely was going to be on the move. I actually quite liked him in meeting him. I dealt with him a little bit in his NHL days, but not to the degree we did in doing this piece. And, you know, it doesn't always matter whether you like someone or not, but I found him to be quite accommodating. I liked his honesty. I liked when he got a bit feisty with me. I thought, you're getting the real stuff here. And I do kind of wonder, I know that he doesn't yet want to go down this road, if he might change some things, you know, because, you know, I don't get the sense he's fully at peace with everything that happened around, you know, the circumstances that led to him leaving the NHL. But you're right, he's not cookie cutter. He's not like most hockey players. He's not, certainly not like any stereotypes you might have about Swedish hockey players in particular. And he can be a bit difficult, but as I say, I think that's in a good way.
But that's the interesting thing too in all of this. And we've grown up watching Swedish hockey players going back to Boreas Alming and Inga Hammarström with the Toronto Maple Leafs in the 70s, of them being the most easygoing, you know, whichever way the wind blows, I'm playing hockey and this is wonderful and I'm not going to behave like other hockey players do. We tend to forget that Swedish hockey players are human beings as well, and they're not all cookie cutter, and they're not all, well, whichever way the wind blows, I'm just going to go along with it. And you really see that with Patrick Berglund.
I agree. And I'll say this too, you know, having been covered international hockey, there's a different relationship Swedish players have with the media. And in general, as I've observed, I don't speak their language. They are more accommodating than what we are accustomed to over here. They give much longer interviews. They give many more one-on-one interviews. I mean, even you go to the Olympics and a star player goes down the line in the mix zone and will do one-on-one interview, one-on-one interview, one-on-one interview. It's just not the same culture we have in media in North America with, you know, big players, big stars, you know, in those big events. And so, you know, I think that might be partly why we find them so, oh, this is refreshing, because they're used to it a little bit more. And Patrick, I will say, I don't want to paint the bad picture here, but he's a little more feisty than his contemporaries.
He can be prickly, as we see in the piece. And I can remember one conversation I had with one agent at a junior top prospects game. And I said, you know, I can't recall any of your clients ever being a big problem. He goes, I deliberately recruit from the two most low maintenance places on the face of the earth. I call it my 2S rule. I only recruit from Saskatchewan and Sweden because those are the two most low maintenance places in the hockey world. And that's what, to your previous point, kind of makes Patrick Berglund stand out. Not that he's a problem. He is just a he breaks that stereotype that we have of the nice guy Swedish hockey player.
And from what I've been able to glean from Swedish colleagues is he's like that. He's been like that for them in Swedish. So, I mean, this isn't...
He's consistent.
It's not related to the way he left, you know, his career over here in North America. It's not related to maybe some of how sensitive this story can be. It's the way he is. It's just... He lets you know how he feels about you. And as I say, I'd actually much rather that than the guys who are sort of, they're like the mayor. They're, you know, shaking every hand and kissing every baby and presenting one side of themselves, and but they're just lying through their teeth. I mean, I think what makes Patrick a compelling story isn't just how unique it is that he left the NHL on his own accord the way he did, but also that you always know exactly how he feels about what he's talking about.
We were one of the people who reported about what happened, how he got traded. And that was that he had a no-move clause and had switched to a partial no-trade clause a year ago on July 1st, so July 1st, 2018. And whatever the case was, the list ended up not getting in on time, and Buffalo would have been on the list, but it wasn't there, which allowed them to ram the deal through, the Ryan O'Reilly trade, which Berglund was part of. And there's always been an unanswered question of how exactly did this happen? And CJ, I saw you in full pace mode about 2 hours before the piece aired as you were dealing with that. Why don't you take the listening audience through that as much as you feel comfortable?
Well, it's always been an interesting part of the story because you're right. I believe you, Elliot, were the first to have on headlines that he didn't get that list in on time. But there hasn't never really been an explanation of why that happened, how that happened. And obviously that was part of what we wanted to tackle here. I think in the early stages of planning for this story, Jeremy McLean, who I mentioned off the top, our producer, had reached out to his agent or former agent, Peter Wallen, and didn't hear back. He wasn't an active part of the storyline. Obviously, when we were in Stockholm, we asked Patrick about it, and he was careful not to, he didn't name the agent, but it was not hard to read between the lines when he said,
I had a very big no-trade list that wasn't sent in at the time, so... Let's just say that's not on me. That's on someone else.
And, you know, we spoke to his father, Anders, who was a player in the Swedish Hockey League in his own right, and he was a little more direct.
Of course, we were very, very angry to his agent. He was traded against his will. He couldn't do anything about it.
Buffalo would have been one of the 20 no-trade teams probably at the time?
Yes. Yes. Please, but, yep. Happens, I guess.
But, you know, they never explained what happened. You know, it was only really in the last few days I'd reached back out to Peter to see, was there some extent?
Now, hold on. We should say that Jeremy McElhaney, who you mentioned put together the piece and is an excellent producer, he first reached out to Wallen a year ago in February.
Yes.
I think we should make that clear. You and Jeremy just didn't go to Peter, like, in the days before the trade. You had tried to do this before.
No, and it was only, you know, because initially when you're doing something like this, you're not sure what day it's going to air, all those types of things. Mm-hmm. When it got to the final week and I was sure it was going to be on Hockey Night on Saturday, you know, I'd reach back out to him, I think, on Thursday morning and just said, just so you know, that piece is going to air on Saturday. And, you know, if there's any extenuating circumstances you want to share, any update of things that have happened further since then, you know, coming out of the story, I'm going to be on set and I'm happy to give your side of things or update, you know, anything you want to say, really, was a courtesy. And you know, we had a back and forth over a couple of days there and, you know, right up until just before we went to air. And you know, finally, Peter did give us a statement that essentially said, at that time, you know, leading up to that July 1st, 2018 deadline, he had more than once, both verbally and in writing, asked Patrick Berglund to provide him the 20 teams that he didn't want to be traded to, didn't want to be able to be traded to, and that he never got that list. And that was basically his explanation of why it never got submitted, why that didn't happen. You know, I've since tried to reach Patrick, and I get the feeling that at this point he just wants to let it's sleeping to dogs lie. Yeah. You know, what's done is done. You know, that might change at some point in the future. So we don't have the full explanation, I don't believe, but we have maybe a bit more window into why this is still so emotional for everyone involved, is that clearly there's a difference of opinion between Patrick and Peter Wall and his agent about what happened there and about why that list never got sent in. And what's interesting here, remember, this was part of the trade for Ryan O'Reilly. I mean, yep. We could always do this in hockey, but the cascading circumstances, I mean, would St. Louis have won a Stanley Cup if they don't get Ryan O'Reilly? I mean, we'll never be able to know. But I mean, this was a significant trade, obviously, for Patrick personally and what happened afterwards, but also for the Blues and you know, the fact they went and won a Stanley Cup last June.
I would just say to everyone who's listening to this who potentially could be contacted for a story, the only thing I would say to people is, you know, we're not infallible reporters. We have our moments too. But I know some guys have told me in the past that I feel if I don't get back to you on something I won't answer, you won't go with it. And I say, well, I would always feel better if you confirmed it, but if I have enough other elements that I have it, we're going to go with it. And I always tell people, even if you want to talk privately before you do anything publicly, it's better to do that than to ignore it, because then you lose control of it.
And I should say, in this specific case, we weren't looking to assign any blame either. I mean, really what we're trying to do is, a player left the NHL under mysterious circumstances, and we want to try to understand as best we can why that might have happened. What led to it? What can we learn from it? Is there a world where he comes back? I mean, all those questions kind of laid out in the air for a year, and Patrick hasn't done very many interviews. I don't know if he'll be doing many after this one, but we were lucky enough where he gave us a lot of time and we got at least some sense into what he dealt with and how he got to that point.
Yeah, I want to follow up with that a little bit and the sort of what's next question. As we record this with you, CJ, it is Monday, December 2nd, 2:28 p.m. Eastern. What do you think happens to Patrick Berglund next?
Something tells me he's going to play another NHL game somewhere at some time. It looks like he's had a decent season. I've heard, you know, some mixed reviews. But let's remember, too, he took a lot of time off. And it does seem as though he's in a much better place than when he left. I think he's happy playing for Djurgården over in Sweden. But the Swedish Elite League, or Swedish Hockey League nowadays it's called, is still pretty high-level hockey. Last I looked, he was a little bit less than a point a game, but he's produced there. And I just have a feeling, given his pedigree, he's only 31 years old. He's demonstrated by his decision here that money is not his main motivator in decision-making. So, you know, I read into that he might come back over here on a very bargain basement contract.
And he can come over as soon as next year, right?
Exactly. I mean, he could actually even come over before the trade deadline, but he'd have to clear waivers because he's played in Europe. And so I'm not saying someone would sign him. I actually don't. The one thing I don't know, he might not have an out clause in the deal he has with Djurgården. I'm not sure of that. But yes, he could potentially come next season on a league minimum type of contract. And I have the feeling this guy has a little bit of unfinished business. So,
but would it surprise you if he just stayed and became a what if?
No.
No.
I mean, it couldn't, because most people don't have the guts to do what he did. I mean, let's call it as it is. Most people,
I admire it. I really do.
I mean, obviously he was in a tough place mentally when this happened. And you know, he told us he was anxious and kind of detailed what those last few days were like in Buffalo.
It was after a practice, I came out and I was in a, obviously in a really, really bad place at that time, very anxious, and
I wanted to call it quits.
And did you tell anyone at the moment that you actually made the decision?
A couple of players I actually talked to.
Did anyone try to talk you out of it, or?
They were very supportive and understanding. I obviously lost the happiness for the sport.
But most people don't eject themselves from those type of situations for all kinds of reasons, but the money being an obvious one. I think even just giving up on the NHL, I mean, so many people have to scrape their whole lives to play 10 NHL games, and you know, he got into the 700s and was still under contract for three more years, the rest of last year plus the next three seasons. You know, he was going to be around NHL teams, but I give him credit for having the guts to do what he believed was right, for looking after his own health and prioritizing that over things that are less important, like prestige and money and all the trappings of the world. And the little bit, if you see the end of the long piece that's posted on Sportsnet's YouTube channel, he left the window open to the NHL. And I just think that was a window into his mind that if he can get back there, if he gets another chance, he's going to do it.
Swedish reporters, it put a smile on my face when I saw that Uffe Bodin, one of my favorites, and I think one of yours as well,
absolutely,
CJ, was part of this piece. What did you learn from reporting in Sweden and the reporters that you used?
Well, you know, a lot of these guys know Patrick much better than I do, right? And so they're able to provide a little bit more context around his upbringing, you know, what got him to the point where he's drafted by St. Louis in the first round. And, you know, I think even a little bit better window into why he might leave and come back and play in Sweden. I mean, if you just live here, that might sound crazy. I think, you know, we have to respect and understand if you grew up in Sweden, it's a pretty good outcome in itself. I'm thinking Patrick Berglund's early days as a hockey player, he just wanted to play in the Swedish Hockey League. That's where his dad played. That's not a bad outcome if you're talking to a 10-year-old in Sweden, especially probably at the age when he grew up and the NHL seemed more distant than it would today for a young kid. And so I think that was the main thing we learned from them. And I think they also had, you know, they know people that know him. They had context around, you know, how tough a spot he was in when he got home. I mean, that part was sort of left untold of his story. He leaves Buffalo, that gets reported on, and then the world moves on, right? But he went back home to Västerås, Sweden, and didn't skate for a long time and had to, you know, free his mind. And, you know, one thing he ended up telling us was how much of a weight off it was for him to have no obligations just for a period of time where he could focus on his own health and decide what he wanted to do next. I don't think the plan was for him to play hockey again necessarily at that point. And, you know, he got to that point over the course of several months. And so, you know, that was where Uffe comes in and the reporter that's actually from his hometown. I forget the gentleman's name, unfortunately. I didn't meet him. Jeremy did that interview. But they can explain the world he left and the world he came back to a lot better than I could on my own.
Anything else you want to say?
I'm fascinated to see what comes next. You know, as I mentioned off the top, I found it interesting that Jason Botterill, the Sabres GM, you know, declined an interview. Phil Housley, the former coach of the Sabres last season, who's now with Arizona, declined an interview. TJ Oshie, who's one of the best friends of Patrick Berglund over in here, declined an interview. You know, obviously his agent gave us a statement in the end, but wasn't active. I mean, I think that the challenge of the story like this, so much of it is happening in one man's between his ears, in one man's mind, and people are really cautious about wanting to speak for him. But also, I think part of that is because it's still a sensitive subject. I think there's still another chapter or two to be written here. And, you know, I'm just curious to see what Patrick Berglund does with that time, because he is 31. I mean, he could play either a lot of years in Sweden or this is it. He could come back here or he might not. And, you know, this will always be a big part of his story.
Well, first of all, I hope that he's in a good place. And secondly, I hope that wherever he goes, I'd love to see him come back, but I hope it brings him great peace of mind. That's the most important thing.
And add us, CJ, to the list of people saying this to you. Great work.
Thank you.
Hey guys, it's Trevor Georgie, president and GM of the St. John Sea Dogs.
Hey yo!
Thanks for coming to visit us in September. We had an amazing time and we still talk about it. So congrats. Congrats on 100 episodes. What an amazing milestone. I was told by Amel that the only reason I'm on here is for wrestling references, so here we go. You two, 31 Thoughts Podcast, is the Bill Goldberg of podcasts. To put this milestone in context, you are just 74 episodes away from eclipsing Goldberg's illustrious run as champion in WCW. But we all know that you will never defeat that streak because at the 174th recording, in a twist that only Eric Bischoff could write, someone from rival TSN will sneak into your studio, dressed as security guards, and taser you both to the ground. Jeff, see you at your draft day in June. You're the top 1969 born prospect. And Elliot, I will see you back in Toronto before then. Congrats, guys.
That's awesome. Thank you to Trevor Georgie for that one. I think we're really going to go through with that, too.
Absolutely.
Finally drafted into junior hockey, the crop of the 69. You know, my favorite, because Trevor just references Goldberg in the streak. As he was doing that through WCW, I remember talking to Goldberg about that, and his finisher was spear jackhammer. So Ric Flair is one of the guys that's going to be a victim on this streak.
Mm-hmm.
So Flair, I think at that point, probably was like 55 years old. So Goldberg's got him up. It's Nitro. It's, you know, Monday nights, millions of people watching. And he almost drops him because he's laughing. And I asked him, so what did he say to you? He said, I got him up and I was holding him up there and Flair's right in my ear and he says, Bill, don't forget, I'm 55 years old and I love you. And I almost started laughing and almost dropped Nature Boy.
By the way, before
thanks to Trevor Georgie for that.
That was a great story, Jeff. That was really well done. Before we move on to our interview, we just should mention the message before the commercial break. Tara Sloan.
We have her fooled. Jeez, that's
thank you,
much
Tara.
Too
it's a very
sweet,
nice
Tara.
Message.
Please. That is from both me and Elliot. Man, we have you fooled. But thank you, Tara. That is very kind. Very thoughtful words from a very thoughtful person who, you know, one of the things I've always admired about her too is we always talk about evolution and changing. Man, can you imagine the different stripes that Tara has worn in her career mm-hmm. and been at the top level of all of it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's as a musician, whether it's as a broadcaster, as a social activist, someone encouraging change, not just in our sport, but entire society, she's at the top of all of it. So thank you for those kind words. Elliot, we'll finish up the podcast. We've been negligent on this. We'll get back to it with some hashtag Ask31s. And this from Puckline Betting. Considering trades and games in hand, do some players occasionally play more than 82 regular season games?
Yes. I believe, I want to say that the record, I used to know this, I'm going to double check it, but I believe the record
in front of
was
here,
Ross Lonsberry.
No. The record is Jimmy Carson.
For some reason, I thought Ross Lonsberry was the guy, but I mean, I'll believe you. I'm not calling you a liar at this particular moment.
Not for this particular fact. 86 games. Quant Hockey has this. We actually had a follow-up.
86?
86 games. Yeah, man. 86 games in 92-93. Played by Jimmy Carson. Also with 86, Bob Kadelski in 93-94. Bill Guerin with 85 in 2000-2001. I'll just run down some of the hits here. Tied at 85, a number of players. Joe Riecke, Rem Murray, Mark Lamb, Glenn Anderson.
This is bothering me. Like, I got to find out if Ross Lonsberry played.
Where does that one come from?
I just remember it.
There was a follow-up tweet to this one, and I thank Tom Mitchell for it, who sent in a response. 86 is the current record, and then sent the link over at Quant Hockey. But yeah, Jimmy Carson, man. 86 games. 37 goals, 73 assists.
No, I'm being told he didn't, but I think the internet is wrong.
This is
our new reason Ross Lonsberry played this.
This is our new feature, Elliot versus the internet. From Jay Morrell, can Carl Alsner find a place in the NHL? That is a name, considering how often I would talk about Carl Alsner. I can't believe how quickly I forgot that name.
Yeah, there was a really nice story by, I believe it was Scott Burnside in The Athletic today about him. That's tough, man. There was one quote that really stood out to me, and it was the one about, you think I'm making $4 million and, you know, I'm happy and collecting my money? No. Like, I mean, in the future, maybe he'll look at it and say, hey, I could take care of my family. I'm happy. But I think if you really are wired to be good at something, this would kill you. Now, I will say that there was one case I heard of years ago where there was a guy who was on a big AHL contract.
Exclusive AHL?
Yes.
Okay.
And he got signed and brought up to the... No,
Eric
it's not Westrum. Brett, it's not Eric
Kirby
Westrum.
Law.
So far, you Jody haven't Gage. Gotten it. If you get it, I'll admit it, but you haven't gotten it. And, well, it might have been a two-way.
Donnie Biggs.
Sorry, who'd you say?
Donnie Biggs.
No. He might have been on a two-way, but it was a big AHL deal.
Okay.
So he got called up to the NHL, and he was actually making less money because of the escrow.
Well, that happened to Wade Redden.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Wade Redden, who went to a state with a lower tax rate and also into the Rangers and also no escrow.
Yes.
He got demoted and made more money.
Yes. Well, that happens all the time.
Sure.
If you go down to the AHL, you do that. But this one player, according to his teammates, I never crossed paths with this player again to ask him if it was true. But according to his teammates, he asked to be sent down.
He did not. I was going to say he asked to be sent down.
Yes.
That's awesome. Speaking of sent down or called up from Tom Ertz Jr., when do you think the Rangers will call up Igor Shesterkin, and what type of trade market could there be for Alexander Georgiev? Shesterkin's just killing it in the American
League. I got to think
there
would be, and Georgiev is becoming close to being waiver eligible.
Ooh.
Georgiev's waiver eligibility is coming up.
What kind of market's there? Considering we live in the load management era of all sports.
I'll tell you, I don't know what the Rangers are going to do. Maybe that's something I can ask. I don't know what the Rangers are going to do, but I like him.
All right, from
I think he's competitive and good.
I like him too. Listen, Rangers got a good thing going on in net. From Rye11 at Rebel League, is the NHL done with shrinking the goaler equipment? First of all, points for you, Rye, for the goaler reference. Going old school with us there.
I don't think so. Like, what else are they going to shrink?
Oh, they can always shrink shoulder pads, always shrink. It's the never-ending quest to juice goals. Hey, speaking of NHL goalie equipment, did you see Corey Crawford the other night?
No, what was that?
So they're playing St. Louis. He starts the first period wearing Bauer pads that he's been trying to break in.
Yes.
He got shellacked a couple of games before that wearing the Bauers. So he wears the Bauers against St. Louis period number one and then changes for period number two and goes to CCM for periods two and three. I'd never seen a goalie. Any goalies out there, catch me on this one. I don't know that I've ever seen a goaltender switch his pads mid-game, but he went from the Bowers in the first period back to his old CCMs for periods two
I've
and
never
three.
Seen that.
I was going to say, have you seen that? I've never seen that.
There's a good Twitter feed out there. I think it's called Gear Geek.
Okay.
They're always tweeting when players change gloves and sticks and stuff like that.
Oh, I got to get on that.
It's really good. Yeah, I was going to tell you about that. I like it. Like, I don't know.
I love stuff like that. Give me that all day long. From Mikey G, is Ron Hextall going to get another shot? His draft record with the Flyers is impressive. Provorov, Lindblom, Hart,
yes.
Konechny, Sanheim, Lochte. Like, what happens with Ron Hextall now? Another shot?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He'll get another shot. When Minnesota fired Fenton, he was the front runner right away. Like, guys told me immediately that he was going to get that job. Now, I heard he went in there and was pretty blunt, like Hextall can be.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the right situation for him and them. And they'll be fine with Bill Guerin. I think Guerin will be just fine. But yes, like, you know, he's in LA now. He's biding his time. I think Ron Hextall, he's the kind of guy. I kind of respected that he went into Minnesota, could have had that job and didn't BS his way through it. Like, he told them what he thought was the truth. I think he'll wait till he gets a situation he likes.
We'll finish up by with a question about goaltenders as well. The Kurt Locker.
That's a good name.
It
I
is
like
a good
that.
One. Any big UFAs you don't see being dealt, is Samsonov competent enough to allow Washington to get something for Holtby?
I don't see the Capitals trading Braden Holtby. They're trying to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
I look at the Torrey Krug the same way. This is what I think is going to happen between Torrey Krug and Boston. I don't think he's going to get in Boston what he could get on the open market. They're just not going to do it. It's not their way. They can't. I think they go for the Stanley Cup. They keep him. They go for the cup.
Yep.
And then when it's over, they say, Torrey, you can talk wherever you want to talk. If we can trade you and you can get the eighth year, go ahead.
And with that, we will bid you good day. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Emil Dulich. Thanks to Chris Johnston for stopping by. That feature is available at sportsnet.ca and our Sportsnet YouTube channel. We encourage you all to check it out. We'll leave you with a band we featured in Episode 9. I love this band. Scenic Route to Alaska. All the music you've heard on today's podcast was by the trio from Edmonton. Here's Scenic Route with their latest single, Give a Little, on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. All we've got to do.
This is Shay from the band Scenic Route to Alaska. We just wanted to send out a huge congrats to Jeff and Elliot for 100 awesome episodes of the 31 Thoughts podcast. Here's to the next 100, boys. And here's to Connor, Leon, Nuge, Ethan Bear, Tip, The Real Deal, Ken Holland, and the rest of the Oilers. Go Oilers and go Jeff and Elliot. Props, guys.
Shows. It's pretty amazing. We've learned that Elliot used to cover the NBA, Jeff loves him some wrestling, and a whole lot about hockey. Congrats, boys. Now wrap this up. We have to focus on some TV.